ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Warwick's Weekly Wrap.
Joining us for a look at the sporting week is Warwick Hadfield. Warwick, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Good evening to you, Philip.
You sound a bit snuffly, old fellow.
Yes, a cold in spring. You get through winter and you think you've made it and bang.
I know. Happens all the time. I know. You just think, you think I'm through it now. Sunny dimes, just had the first swim and everything and then boombo. Yeah, like anyway. No,
well, I did 40 minutes on the bike yesterday and I thought right at the finish of it, I thought, oh, I'm not going all that well. And the next thing you know, coughing and sneezing.
Anyway, I hope you get better soon. Now, so what's up? Well, cricket starts Friday, of course.
And the build-up's been, you know, in that way. I mean, it's been a bit tacky tabloid. There's been some interesting stories, really good stories. The loss of Hazelwood over the weekend has opened the way for Brendan Doggett to play. And that would, if he is picked, make it the first time that two Indigenous players have played for Australia. Because, and I think that there have been other permutations put forward, but I would think, I mean, I know the selectors aren't influenced by these things, but I think that Cricket Australia would love nothing more than to have two Indigenous players, because they've been making up for a lot of things since 1868, really. Or, of course, the treatment of Eddie Gilbert all those years ago. And it's a wonderful story. And just looking at his ascension to this place, you know, it's not been easy. He's 31 years of age, and he's done all the hard yards and spent some time in... you know, he started out in Queensland and has ended up in South Australia, made the move to get more opportunities, along with Nathan McSweeney, who did get some opportunities, but ran into a bloke called Jasprit Bumrah, so he's struggling to go. So it'll be, I mean, I don't think Australia loses, well, it does, it loses a lot when you lose Josh Hazlewood.
Our two best bowlers are out, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mitchell Stark, you know, he's a world-class act, and look at Boland, look at Boland's done against England, 6 for 7 at the MCG.
Yeah, that's true.
And it brings us to this thing, the talk about Joe Root. Joe Root scored 39 test centuries, and there's this agitprop going around the cricket circles in Australia. Well, he's never scored 100 in Australia, so, you know, we don't really rate him. I would have thought by the time he got to 39, you'd be rated. But having said that, the English do point out that in the last Ashes series, they hit, knowing where he was going to land the ball meant they knew where to put the bat, so they smashed Scotty Boland all over the English parks. But because he's got this different approach and different way of doing things in Australia, which it seems more effective. And he says he did one of those, you know, someone has to go out and talk to the media things yesterday, where he said nothing and said a lot. But he basically said he's been tinkering with his bowling, and what someone asked him what he'd been doing, and he just looked at them and said, "It's my secret." Look, there's plenty.
Marnus Labuschagne says that that Joe Root's the best batsman in the world.
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment, do you reckon?
Well, I don't know. His little mate there, Smith, might take umbrage at that. I thought I was your hero, Marnus. the record says, I believe that the way whoever bats the best, whether it's Smith or Root, will in many ways decide the series. It's interesting, you know, stats are coming out of the woodwork as they do at this time. Smith averages 60 with the bat when he's captain. And a lot less when he's not captain. So, and he's going to be captain this first test. So, that's an interesting thing. It's you know, look, right up until that first ball is bowled, everything anyone says is correct. You know, I noticed that Ian Chappell's come out today and said Australia would be foolish to open the batting with Marnus, which means I would think they, even before Ian Chappell, I think the selectors would have gone with Jake Weatherald as and drop. Probably looks like Beau Webster, who hasn't done anything wrong in his short tenure in the Australian side in the place of Cameron Green. But there was a suggestion I saw floating around that they only play Boland and Stark and use the two all-rounders as the fast bowlers. But I don't think the Australian selectors want that. They want that person who bats at 6 to bowl 8 to 10 overs just to take the pressure off the top four, which of course includes Nathan Lyon's off-spin. So we'll see. I mean, look, everything's correct until that first ball, and if it's Mitchell Stark bowling it, well, anything could happen, as we saw. Ask a bloke by the name of Rory Burns, who's started his tour of Australia with a first ball duck, and I don't think he's ever really recovered from that, actually. He's disappeared, you know, replaced by other English openers. And look, we had that sort of, I don't know, that match when the English A team played the English B team effectively, and Ben Stokes got six for bowling long hops. You know, you almost wonder if some of the blokes in the B side said, "Gee, if I give Ben a wicket, he might pick me in the seniors." <So. laughs> But look, you know, everything's different these days. Yeah. The way teams prepare, and you know, there's lots of talk about England not playing every state as they used to do in the 50s. You know, they'd land in Perth and work their way right around for the first test somewhere in Brisbane, having played all the state sides. But you just can't do that in the modern game. And as Ben Stokes pointed out, they've been preparing for this for a long time. Yeah. And that includes Mark Wood and Jofra Archer being set to go and bowl heat and aim at the ribs of the Australian batsmen. So it's
yes, rib and chin music coming up.
It'll be body line within the modern rules. I mean, obviously, in olden times, they could have as many men as they wanted almost behind the square leg umpire, but that's not the case now. So, with body line, Australia had bowled body line in the 20s, but no one had done it quite as well as Larwood, and that's why, you know, Douglas Jardine reckoned Australians were squealers, and they got a bit of their own, their own back, and they didn't cop it, and they ran off to off to the diplomats and started sending telegrams to England. This is not cricket. Now, you know the great story about Jardine and a certain Australian word. He walked into the Australian dressing room and he said to Bill Ponsford, the captain, "One of your players called me a bastard." And Ponny turned to the other players and said, "Which one of you bastards called this bastard a bastard?" and Jardine realised he wasn't going to win that argument and walked out. But it's interesting too, also, when he was no longer captain of England, given this job of beating Bradman and beating Australia and getting the Ashes by the MCC types, Bill O'Reilly said when he got to meet him in the press box covering the 1948 tour, he said he wasn't a bad sort of a fella. He'd just been given this job to beat England, to win the Ashes for England and beat Australia no matter what, and he applied the necessary strategies to do it, and he was fortunate enough to have a bowler as good as Larwood to do it.
It's always an anticipated series, the Ashes in Australia, and this one is shaping up very nicely as well.
10:40 Western Australian, well, they call it Western Australian Standard Time, isn't
that's
it?
Right.
10.
That's right.
And you can, wherever you are in the rest of the country listening to this right now, you can do your arithmetic. is Western Australia, how many hours is
2
Western
hours,
Australia?
Yeah, yeah.
2 hours, 2 hours, right. Okay, well, I'm sure you don't need to call on Rick Finlay or any other cricket statistician to work it out for you if you're in Alice Springs or in Brisbane or just sitting over the border in New South Wales.
ABC Sport will have a live blog as well as a live call of every ball in the series. Now, what else is happening around the traps? Go on.
We'll go to Payne Haas.
Payne Haas says he's not going to go.
Well, the rumours are, and reports, apparently he told somebody who told Clarence the Clocker and the horse told me, but apparently he's looking to stay with rugby league. The reason that this person who was told by Payne Haas has given was that there's great uncertainty about R360, the finances. There's also this threat of a 10-year ban that Peter Volandis has been talking about, and while that probably would be a restraint of trade, you know, if you could probably spend the extra $1.5 million you get from R360 going to the courts to fight it. So it's probably a smart move. As Peter Volandis also pointed out, Payne Haas's legacy in rugby league, you know, albeit a game confined to relatively small bits of the world, he will be considered as a great prop forward in the Arthur Beetson. Reputation-wise, it's a different game to the one Arthur Beetson played. But, you know, he is the great modern forward. In the test, when he played for Samoa, he was on the field for 80 minutes and still running. And he was making cover-defending tackles and doing all sorts of things that props don't normally do. So he's an extraordinary athlete. And, you know, when he runs for the try line from 10 metres out, he takes an awful lot of stopping. And you know, rugby, there's also talk today out of England too that the English Rugby Union is going to put bans on players, both the women and the men who go to R360. But there's just a general feeling around that the finances aren't there at the moment.
It just seems to have gone quiet, doesn't it, anyway? Anyway.
Well, you know, who knows? These sorts of things come and go. Rebel Tours. Liv. Now, Liv's gone to... It's no longer...
Speaking of golf. Yeah, well, look, I mean, doesn't seem to be any rapprochement with the PGA Tour, so I don't know what's going on, actually.
But they've gone to 72 holes.
They've gone to 72 holes. So what does that mean? They're not different at all. Not LIV anymore. They're what...
Well, I can't do it off the top of my head. I should have looked it up before I came on air. I mean, I did 6 years of Latin.
Well, it'll be LXX... 1-1.
Yes, yeah, of course. Yeah. Imagine, you know, trying to get that out as you're calling. And the winner of this year's trophy is LXX.
I don't know what it means, but anyway, on to more important golf news, which is that Rory McIlroy's run the race to Dubai. And it's his seventh. He's a true champion, this bloke, and it's quite an achievement. I think if he wins... If he wins eight, it'll equal Colin Montgomery's record.
Yeah, and the Englishman he beat Fitzpatrick as well. He was pretty happy with.
Well, Fitzpatrick's a US Open winner, so he's a pretty champion.
But he's not had big money wins until this year, really, has he?
Well, he's won the US Open. Exactly. But it was a terrific win by he didn't win the champion. He didn't win the tournament. Matt Fitzpatrick won the tournament, but Rory McIlroy came second, a thrilling second, actually in a playoff.
Yeah, but he whacked it into the water.
He put his drive into the creek.
I mean, look, you know, you can be the I can do that, but you don't expect Rory to do that. But anyway, look, he's a great. Right. He's a great athlete.
Fantastic. All right, rugby. Don't mention the Wallabies, hey. What's happened?
Well, what has happened? I don't know. I mean, it just seems to have all fallen apart. They weren't helped. Players weren't available for England, so there's, good players weren't available for England. Then Will Skelton got injured, and when he might have played, but, and they had to call James O'Connor back from a holiday in Morocco. It's a very disjointed side, and the number 9 and number 10 have had more changes of leadership than the Liberal Party at the moment, you could say, because James O'Connor was back. Yeah, I don't know what Joe Schmidt... I think he was trying to leave a legacy for Les Kiss, where he had a broad range of players from which to choose, but in the end it just seems that it's created a lot of confusion, and their discipline in the last few minutes against Ireland was terrible. I mean, they turned a defeat into an absolute belting, and that's not good. And once again, as against Italy, too many ill-disciplined things, conceding penalties and whatever. So I don't know. It's Les Kiss has got a big job on his hands. But let's talk about Sport Australia and the Don Award, which has gone to Oscar Piastri.
Yes, this is the Sports Australia Hall of Fame awards, and
they're all out when they're
tuxedos. There was a big knees up and tuxedos at the Crown Palladium in Melbourne. It was quite a night, and the big one went to. Run, drum roll, please.
Now, Oscar Piastri has won the Don. His Don is good. And it's interesting. I mean, I wonder when the judges made the decision to award that. Would that I wonder if that was when he was 30 points in front or trailing Lando Norris by a few. But, Bruce McAvaney's put it really well. He's the head of the judging panel. He said this man has inspired lots of Australians. He's made, and it's a very, very tough sport and an elite sport. For many Australians, it's an alien sport. You know, you just don't understand it. And he's succeeded at this level and could still win the Drivers' Championship.
He could still, sort of similar.
The one that I really like was the Dawn Award, which has gone to Lane Beachley. I don't know if you've ever interviewed her. But
I have. Yes, I've interviewed Lane Beachley a number of times.
She's a ripper, isn't she? I mean, she had that dreadful chronic fatigue syndrome where she couldn't get off the couch, but used to then get up and win seven world titles in a row.
This is for kind of a lifetime achievement award thing, hey?
And providing inspiration, demonstrating courage and bravery is what the blurb says, to change sport for the better. And look, I know that when she started out as a grommet, there were two rules. Women don't surf, and if they do, they don't get paid as much money as the men. But she set out to change that, and she spent almost as much time in boardrooms badgering CEOs as she did on the waves for a long time.
Yeah.
And eventually, I mean, it's not perfect yet. It's still a long way to go. The two competitions run a bit differently, but she's done well. Jason Dunstall, he got admitted to the Hall of Fame, the boy from Brisbane, who moved to Hawthorn and really became one of the greatest forwards of the modern era, didn't he? I mean, it's just extraordinary. As he pointed out, though, he did have a pretty good team getting the ball to him. And his mate from pay TV idiocy. I mean, I think Andrew Gaze, as great an athlete as he was, he worked out that there's a lot more money once you've retired in acting like a clown than trying to be a serious commentator. And he and Jason Dunstall have this show on pay TV where they do all sorts of silly things. He's been elevated to legend. And
I'm very happy about the bloke who started more lawnmowers on the tennis court than anybody else, Leighton Hewitt.
Yeah, good on him. What he's done continues to do for tennis. I mean, he is a chap who absolutely puts back into the sport, doesn't he, by captaining the Davis Cup. And he's going to play doubles with his son in one of these satellite events. It's great. And the other one that I really like, elevated to high honours, is Belinda Clark. She comes from that little town of Denman, just out of Newcastle, where this new young Australian player has come from as well. 1,500 people. But Belinda Clark has a big job ahead in the next few weeks. She's got to launch this book about the women who only 50 years ago, when they played cricket, the manly game of cricket, as it was called, they were forced to wear corsets and stockings. And a guy called Craig Horne, a musician, in fact, a very good musician around Melbourne, his mum was one of these women who was forced to wear corsets and stockings. And he discovered all her trophies and went looking for the story behind the trophies and found that she actually had played for Victoria and Australia. And then she started telling him about this, having been forced to wear these clothes. It's changed a lot since then, thankfully, and you have to say Cricket Australia has done a great job there, because they were one of the first sports in Australia to really start paying the women a living wage ahead of anyone, basketball, netball.
I've got to let you go, because you've got to do two things. One, you've got to stay glued to the AFL draft, of course.
Look, isn't it?
And secondly, get some lemon into you, but go on.
Is it petty that they do it the week before the Ashes test to try and score some column inches from cricket? But I think it's also wrong that they do it and when the women, the AFLW, have got preliminary finals this weekend.
They've got preliminary finals this weekend, that's right. Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be from pretty good football, because Brisbane are coming. Hmm. Brisbane are really keen to do what the two rugby league sides did and what
the men's side.
North Melbourne have this astonishing record of just going through undefeated, undefeated, undefeated. So there's going to be some ripper games if those two teams make the grand final. So, and Melbourne, Melbourne have been leading with their chin a bit, but they knocked out the Crows at the weekend. So, and anyway, look, Willem Dersma is likely to be the number one draft pick. He's from a famous footy family. I think there's been Dersmas in both the AFLW and the AFL. And he's going to go to the West Coast, because they have the number one pick. And then it's all sorts of deals being done about people from the Gold Coast Academy and various other academies before they go back to picking where you ended up on the AFL ladder last year.
Exactly. All right. I'm going to let you get some lemon and honey into you.
Isn't there supposed to be a third part of that? And don't you say hot lemon, honey and whiskey?
Oh, yes, that's true. Yes. Well, I shall leave you to administer to self-medicate, as the expression is. All right, get well, Warwick. Good on you.
Good on you, Philip. Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.